going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
And welcome you into another edition of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. With me, as always, Alan Medlock from Red Dirt, Red Bird, and AMedlock1 on Twitter. But joining us again, because it seems to be our kind of preseason thing, is to bring on guests so that things are a little bit more interesting than just Alan and I talking about nothing. We've got Ben Cerruti with us today from Birds on the Black. And Ben, what are you, STL fan BC7 on Twitter? Is that right?
Exactly, yep.
Wow, how did I pull that off of my head without even looking? I have done my thing. I am downhill from there. So Ben is obviously, again, riding at Birds on the Black. And you know Ben from his projection system, which is what we're going to talk about, at least to start off tonight. And Ben, you put out a primer today at Birds on the Black, which everybody should go read, and kind of that. And you've also got Yachty's projection out there, which we'll talk a little bit about too. But on your primer, before we get into really how you do this, I guess the bigger question is, why did you start doing this? What made you get inspired to try to start making your own projection system up, a number of years ago?
All right. So I moved to Kansas City from St. Louis in the mid-2000s. And I feel like this was my way of keeping more in touch with the team and kind of... I don't know. I wasn't used to being away from baseball so much, and the Royals here were absolutely horrendous at the time, and so nobody really wanted to talk baseball. It was all Chiefs, and which was fine with me being a Chiefs fan when I was in St. Louis anyway. But this is just kind of a way for me to keep my head in the game a little bit and learn a little bit more about the stats behind it. So. Yeah, that's about it.
That's pretty fascinating to start this. I don't know that. It's got to be tough to tinker with. Obviously, you've got this mindset of the statistical background. How is it? Does it get more accurate? Do you find every year, or is there always some sort of twist that you have to adjust for the next year?
All right, so I've made lots and lots of improvements on it. It was originally just kind of a. Probably my first iteration of it was very much statistical nonsense. It was probably like the last 3 years combined, just the average of those or something. And I've since kind of built it up to the point where it looks at minor league data. It looks at the last 3 years. It looks at full career data. It looks at weighting different years more with most recent years more heavily weighted. A couple of years ago, I think it was after talking to probably before Kyle and all them started Birds on the Black, it was talking to Kyle just about the minor leagues in general, and a couple other people chimed in, and we DM'd a little bit about kind of what each level kind of like the gaps between the levels and the minors and where the KBO and the Japanese league and all that would kind of fit in there so that I could kind of project a little bit more closely minor leaguers early on in their careers. I still don't think that I'm to the point where I do that very well yet. And we can kind of talk about some of the minor leaguers and how that works out in my posts. I don't have a good way of incorporating age yet, and that's something that I've actually talked to Tom Tango about a little bit recently through just Twitter conversations, that I've got some ideas, but I didn't have enough time to incorporate it for this year, and I'm not sure that I'm smart enough to get it in by next year. So we'll see about that.
Have you seen any, it's kind of a two-part question, but any huge abnormalities in the minor league numbers that you run as opposed to what they've put up in the bigs?
Yeah, so like the biggest ones that stand out to me are like a Jordan Hicks. You know, I try to do a reliever to starter or starter to reliever conversion in my data, and just he's a guy who his stuff plays out so well in the majors in the bullpen that having him come from, I forget if it was Peoria or Palm Beach or wherever he came from, straight to the majors, just my low minors data is so discounted in my formula because it's so far away from the bigs that it's basically saying he's going to be trash, and I know he's not going to be, and I just kind of that's where the paragraph, you know, the non-data portion of my projections have to just kind of remind everybody that, yeah, they're not going to be even close on guys like that.
Interesting. Yeah. Do you do you have to stay very disciplined in with your formula as opposed to something new that gets introduced? If that makes any sense, you know, like it seems like there's a new catchphrase like every two seasons or every season that comes out, and I didn't know how hard you had to stay the course on what you plan to do.
I mean, I try to stick to what I think is actually gonna matter in my form. I don't know.
Sure.
If I see something that I think I can incorporate, I've got just the first page of the spreadsheet is just like, and so I'll tinker around with some stuff on that page and see if it makes anything just ridiculously wild or if it keeps it fairly constant with what I've had. And I don't know. I think I'd have to have an example to explain it much better than that.
No, sure. I kind of felt like that one may be a hard one to catch. It just seemed like there's a new there's something new that comes out that's being tracked like every year, but basically that's because it's all over my head anyway.
Well, and I think that maybe just opens up to, have you been able to incorporate any of the the Statcast data, the exit velocity and spin rate and all that kind of stuff? Is that kind of factored into your projections yet, or is that still something down the road?
No, it's not. That's something that's more down the road, I guess. I think that it's still so new for players, like the Rapsodo stuff that the team is trying to implement more throughout the minors and more throughout the majors even right now, that I think that right now the data would be so misleading. I mean, you see guys who jump miles per hour in a single season, and it's kind of like with spin rate, with, you know, like Trevor Bauer talks about the Astros, people going there are going to get these extra spin rate and all that. And that I think that would be hard to do. Although I will say that I am looking a lot into that kind of data to do something else with. Mm-hmm. But it's still way down the totem pole at the moment.
Yeah, it feels like that's a baseball-wide thing too, as people are starting to try to put that into some of those projections. But like you said, there's still not enough. To me, it feels like a low enough correlation. Maybe I just don't understand stuff. But the correlation is not necessarily, you can't say this person with this spin rate is going to have, you know, these kind of results just yet. So that's right. That's something to think about.
Yeah, so I guess I can say this. What I've got on the back burner for that is I'm trying to take like velocity and spin rate and then a couple other things. And kind of like how, there's an OPS plus or there's a, WRC plus that are compared to league average. I'm trying to do that for like individual pitches that pitchers throw and get like a four seam plus or slider plus or sinker plus and see if I can do that at all. But it's coming along very slowly would probably be an overstatement. So
yeah, I just takes a bit of time, I'm sure. So we've talked a lot about what's not in your projection. Let's talk about what is. You know, again, you've got a good primer over there at Birds on the Black, and everybody should go read that because, you know, that'll give you a much better idea and some examples. But just, you know, kind of the high points of what goes into the mix so that when we're talking about things in the future, people know kind of what we're talking about.
All right. So you can kind of see, like, okay, so I put up Yadier Molinas today. And mm-hmm. the way the projections start this year is I put up the last 3 years' major league stats and his career major league stats. And you can see kind of right away that my projections are going to go towards the mean a little bit. That, you know, with Yadi specifically, his 2017 and 2018, the batting averages are close, the on-base percentages are close, the slugging percentages are close, the OPS are almost identical. In 2019, he drops like 40 points of OPS. His career average is 738 compared to like the 750s of 2017 and 18 and the 711 of 2019. And my projection for him that's already up is a 265 hitter with a 314 OBP, which basically is exactly what he's done the last 3 years. The thing that dropped last year was his slugging, and so it has that rebounding to a 414 for a 728 OPS. And so you can kind of see that it kind of cut in half what he had in 2019 compared to what he'd had in the past of 2017 and 18. It's barely better than his career average slugging, but his on-base percentage is a lot lower. And so the first big bullet point is it's definitely going to regress towards the mean, whether that's for good reasons or for bad, or for good or for bad. Second thing is this year I'm kind of incorporating, I don't want to say it's like 90th percentile and 10th percentile projections like Baseball Prospectus has, because they are much more scientific about their stuff than I am, which is why they can put it behind a paywall and get hundreds and thousands of people to sign up for it. But I am doing kind of a the good and the bad before I give my projection. And so what I'm doing with those is I'm basically taking some of the key stats that I look at and pumping them up by 10% each and seeing what happens with the projection. And so you can see kind of what I would think is probably the top end of what they might do this year versus what I think the bottom end, if like, you know, if a 2018 Fowler, 2019 Carpenter kind of happens to them.
Yeah. That's to have that range is pretty interesting. And I guess gives you either something to dream on or something to point at, you know, if things don't go right. But, so have you all, I mean, I know you said you haven't published this, but have you always kind of had that kind of in your mind when you've been doing these in the past and you just decided to kind of make that jump this year?
So, yeah. So it's something I've tinkered with the last couple of years, and I'd only tinkered with the good. Mm-hmm. And I just had it kind of listed at the bottom as like fantasy is what I had labeled it for the last 2 years in the, you know, below my projections that I went with. Mm-hmm. And, it was just something that I would throw out on Twitter, something like every once in a while, just saying, hey, wouldn't it be cool if this happened this year type of thing. And you know, sometimes a player would get close especially if they're a minor leaguer coming up and they got fed, you know, 60% fastballs or something and they could just feast on them. But they're just kind of fantastical a little bit. Sometimes they get there, sometimes most of the time they don't. But I thought after the last couple of years with some marquee guys getting some poor results, and like even thinking back to like Alan Craig in 2014 and 15, how he just kind of dropped off after that injury, that maybe I should also do that the opposite way.
Hmm. Yeah, and that's unfortunately the way we have to think about it. Alan, I'm sorry, you got some?
Oh, no. I was just, after your next question, I'll be fine. I just, I wanted to know what kind of, I know you kind of led a background. Were there any players that, that made you, that either shot over your projection or shot way under, that it wasn't necessarily injury ridden, that you felt like you needed to probably shoot high or low on both of those and add those into the projection?
You mean in the past?
Or? Yeah, like what was the motivation behind doing the fantasy type number, or what could happen, you know, in the bottom? Was there any one player or group of players that actually happened to that performed above or under your projection that you felt like you probably needed to start adding those in?
Gotcha. Okay, so I think, again, with kind of like when I moved here to Kansas City, just the whole projection system is kind of I wanted to see what I thought might be happening. And I think this was more just curiosity for me. I think what made me want to put it in this year was not only like Fowler Carpenter's last couple of years, but also, truthfully, I got looking at my projection for Paul DeJong this year. Mm-hmm. And his projection is decent, I guess I'll say. I've got him around a 780 OPS. But I don't know if you saw it, Birds on the Black, this offseason. Josh's Home, Josh on Twitter. Josh's Home, I think, is his.
Josh is not home.
Not home. Josh is not home. Sorry. Josh is not home. Wrote an article for Birds on the Black. And it kind of had several conjectures about why DeJong might have had a poorer second half of the year than first half of the year, and really after May almost. And he noted that DeJong got hit on the wrist again in late May in a doubleheader. And I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but he went on to play like all but two more games the whole season after that, and never really got time to rest it. And that was just one of his potential conjectures as to why DeJong didn't hit. And so I kind of got looking and seeing just what DeJong did prior to that and what DeJong did prior to his injuries in previous years. And so I kind of wanted to see like where could he potentially be, as you know, if he did really, really well. And that was kind of one of the reasons I wanted to put it out this year, because I really truly think that 780 OPS is going to be quite low for him. And I'll make you wait to read what.
Yeah. Well, it's really funny because DeJong was going to be one of the guys that I was going to ask you about without playing your cards, just because I feel like I'm a huge DeJong proponent, and I've battled on here with people and my friends. You know, some of them just are I wouldn't say anti DeJong, but probably think that I'm forecasting him to be a lot better than he is. I just feel like with a stable glove, 30 homers, 30 doubles potential is impressive. And that was one of the questions I was going to ask you is, are those power numbers always going to be attainable for a guy like DeJong? I mean, because I think he did show them in the minors up until now. And without getting into the article, you know, can you elaborate on that any?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to look. He had in 1,100 plate appearances in the minors, he did have 46 homers. So that's about 25 a year if you're looking at 600 PAs a year. And I think that he was kind of still growing into his power at the time, you know? And so, I mean, obviously in 2017, he had 13 before he came up and hit 25 more in the majors. So that's 38 in a season. He had 19 in a partial season in 2018. He had up to 30 last year. So, I mean, it seems very sustainable to me. Now, who knows how well he'll hit average-wise.
But sure. Well, the way I try to describe DeJong to anybody that asks is he's incredibly important and he's an incredible talent, but I think he gets miscast as a 2-3-4 hitter in your lineup.
Yeah, and that could be if he hits like I think he can, my kind of fantasy projection or the good, then he's going to have to be a four hitter probably behind
Gold. Interesting.
So do you then take these and compare them after you're done just for for fun, I guess.
Yeah, so last year I did, for the first time, kind of publish that, at least. So at Birds on the Black, I do have, it's a Cerruti's Projection Analysis 2019, and I've got one for the position players and one for the pitchers. Last year, the hitters were well below what I thought average. The pitchers, surprisingly enough, were some were above, some were below. A lot were right on what I was projecting last year. I think my two favorite ones from last year were I basically exactly pegged Giovanni Gallegos, and I basically exactly pegged Dexter Fowler. So those were kind of fun ones for me.
That is interesting. The one, do you also then, like now, this now that you've gotten yours done, do you then look at Zips and Pakoda and others like that, and just to see, you know, where they're different than you and where you might be in line with what they're thinking?
Yeah, I kind of do. I feel like I'm usually closest to either Steamer or I'm trying to remember the name. Is it Marcel that Baseball Reference uses? Mm-hmm. I think I'm usually closest to one of those two. Zips is usually a little more subdued than either of those.
Well, again, we definitely don't want you to give away the writing, because people, it's not just the projections on these posts. I mean, Ben does some good writing on there as well to kind of detail and line out how the good could happen, how the bad could happen, and what may be more reasonable. But just going through your projections, you know, did anybody really stand out, both positively and negatively? And yeah, let's start with there, because I got another question and I'm going to forget it, but go ahead with that part.
So for this year, the ones that always stand out, I feel like are going to be like Carpenter. I've got bouncing back a bit, as you'll see, but I mean, that's because it's going to go towards the mean. And then the other ones that bounce out, that jump out of the page at you, I think, are more the minor leaguers. Like, I'm not going to write up Dylan Carlson because he's not on the 40-man. If he happens to make the team out of spring training, I'll write it up officially. But my projections just really don't like him at all because I don't have that age component in it. And so that one just jumps out at me because it's like, oh boy, that's a really ugly number considering he had a 914 OPS in the minors last year that, you know, is basically all AA or AAA, and he just smoked the ball. And the way I try to word it in my projections is my projections just haven't caught up with him yet, you know? I've kind of got the same thing with Lane Thomas, that my projections just haven't caught up to his last 2 years yet because he has so much more data in the minors that kind of outweighs that at lower levels still. So,
and then this year, and so you've been doing this long enough, it's not the first time you run into it, but you've got a foreign baseball component. You've got KK coming in. Are you able to do a projection from somebody coming from Japan or Korea with any real confidence?
So, funnily enough, Miles Michaelis, my 2018 projections for him were almost spot on. Last year, Michaelis was fairly well below what I projected. He took a bad bounce back. I'm going to try to pull him up right now while we're talking, but was Shohei Ohtani, was he 2018 as well?
I think that's right, yes. Yes, I think
because
yeah.
Because I want to say I projected him as both a hitter and a pitcher, and I want to say I got fairly close on both of those as well. And so both of those two were Japanese League, so we'll see how it works with the KBO with Kim. I'm kind of holding off on the pitchers for now. I'm projecting position players first because I feel like we have so many guys that could be starters, could be relievers, that it's making it very hard to write up a projection without doing double the work and just doing as a reliever and as a starter.
And nobody wants to do double the work.
It took me long enough to do the single work here. So.
Exactly.
On what kind of piqued my interest on yours when, and this was heck November probably, whenever I was ready to see what your projections were lining up like, where going over the research when you kind of felt like they were digging their heels in and they were going to go with internal options in the outfield. Well, then I started looking at your Fangraphs and your Baseball Reference and stuff like that to see if there was anything on those that would stand out to why they were doing it other than the eye test that we've seen all along. I personally think I don't mind that they're going the route that they're going, but how hard was it to kind of stretch out? You know, you said that your data hadn't caught up with a Thomas or with an O'Neill, because honestly, when you look at those, their projections on the big sites, it's underwhelming and it makes you a little bit nervous. Mm-hmm. But someone that I'm sure that they probably just looked at the rudimentary numbers, because, or meaning that you as a Cardinals fan, you may have turned over more stones to look at that. Are you optimistic about the outfield?
I am. I think that
good.
My projections have Bader bouncing back a bit to kind of more 2018 stats, not like anything better than that. But if he gives you 2018 stats and elite defense in center, you're fine.
Sure.
My numbers have liked O'Neill. They've liked O'Neill the whole time. I'll pull this up and read it as I can here. I'll read. Oh, geez. I can't talk. I'm sorry. I'll pull up my write-ups and I'll just read the first paragraph of the O'Neill one, because I kind of want to explain it that way if I can. But with O'Neill, my projections are really good for him. And I've been a huge Tyler O'Neill proponent, very vocally on Twitter, I feel like, about that. And basically what I wrote up, because it's not coming up, is that I have, because my projections have been so strong on him, they haven't really wavered at all. And then seeing him in the field and seeing his Statcast numbers, everything's kind of backing up the eye test is backing it up. The deeper dive into statistical data, I feel like, is backing up that O'Neill could be that special kind of middle of the order bat. The only time that he's gotten any significant consistent playing time was July last year, and he hit over 300 and dropped his strikeout rate to 25%. His swing and miss rate is abysmal when he's coming off the bench, I think is probably the nice way of saying it. It's like over 50%. And during July, his swing and miss rate was better than Aaron Judge, who Judge has a pretty poor one, but he obviously makes tons of damage when he hits the ball. And so the other day I actually looked up, there's something called WOBA on contact, or Wobicon, but I guess, I don't know if anybody says it that way, but basically, it's how much damage do you do on contact, and when, you know, so it's only balls in play. And over the last 2 years, out of people with at least 150 balls in play, O'Neill is 10th in the majors. And so everything's kind of just backing up that if he gets his consistent playing time, that, I mean, Kyle Reese has said this for 2 years now, that if he gets consistent playing time, he should be one of those guys that performs. And so I think my projections back that up.
I think that says a lot. If you truth serum the Cardinals right now, do you think they would be more concerned about the strikeouts or the health?
I'm more concerned about the health.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel. And if you're that passionate about the numbers, and I think several people are, and I think the Cardinals probably are, I kind of feel the same way. And one last thing, I can't remember, didn't Bader actually barrel quite a few balls last year? Didn't he run into a little bit of bad luck? That's, I thought he did.
Yeah. So with Harrison Bader, his, I mean, it's so weird. Like, he just had a really weird 2019 season because all of his traditional stats, all of his counting stats just tanked. But he had a better eye at the plate. He walked more. He struck out less. He barreled more balls. He hit more with solid contact. He hit a higher higher percentage of hard hit balls. He did so much right at the plate that it was crazy how terrible his numbers truly ended up.
Yeah, and of course, I know he's said he's made some adjustments, worked out. He's been working with Tommy Pham, so it's going to be very interesting to see how that translates, as well as just, like you say, just some natural regression back up, because he was doing some right things last year. It just didn't seem like it at the time when we were watching it, I think, to some degree.
Right. And part of watching it at the time is they threw him a lot more breaking balls and a lot more off-speed pitches, and he didn't demonstrably do better at hitting either of those.
Yeah. So who's next up? I guess we should, let's, if you don't mind giving us a teaser, I assume that you've got them coming. I think you said what, pretty much every day, right?
Coming Paul for the Goldschmidt's next little bit. It's going to be tomorrow. I will say this, Goldschmidt, partially because he's projected for the most plate appearances on the team, but partially because he's just good and I expect him to bounce back a bit too. He is projected to have the most runs, most hits, tied for the most doubles, most homers, and most RBI on the Cardinals by my system next year. Now, if playing time gets a little bit altered from what I have, then maybe not. But as of what I have now.
Well, I say if playing time gets altered, that's not a good thing, because if there's one person that you expect to be out there every day, it's Paul Goldschmidt.
Right. Which means, I meant more of like if O'Neill gets 650 plate appearances instead of the 400 I have for him, or I kind of have like if DeYoung or Carpenter play well enough to get 650 instead of 600, that type of thing.
Yeah. Okay. Alan, you got anything more?
I'm glad to hear you say that about Goldschmidt, because there's a lot of times where I feel like you almost could be accused of, like me personally, of just drinking the Kool-Aid, because you're expecting that bounce back out of Goldschmidt. And I feel like that was a pretty big transition for him after spending his whole career in Arizona to make it to St. Louis. And there may have been a little bit of pressing issue. I felt like that he didn't really come through in some big spots. And I remember, you know, Daniel and I and whoever we had on at the time, I would make the comment that he's going to end up with really good numbers, but it's going to be underwhelming because he hadn't hit in those spots. But then when you look at it, he actually did hit in those spots. And I'm just like, well, you know, I feel like he could bounce back really easy. His game's probably not going to change much with age. And I'm optimistic. So to hear you say that, it makes me feel really good about him.
I will put a disclaimer that he led in runs, hits, homers, and RBI last year as well, though. So I'm only projecting his doubles to kind of bounce back to where they were.
Well, they need it. That's the biggest mystery to me with the Cardinals, is they just didn't hit any.
Yeah, singles and doubles last year.
Man.
Yeah, and that's the thing that we're talking about now, right? I mean, that's what we're looking at for spring. And Ben, I guess I'd ask you to maybe go on the record on all this. What are your thoughts? And again, this gets away from your projections, but what is your thoughts here on Jeff Albert and what this is going to mean for year two? Is it going to be, are they going to be able to really absorb what he's saying and bounce back? Are they just going to bounce back because they can't go any worse? Or what do you think we're going to see out of the offense this year?
Man, who knows? I think that, I truly believe that they're going to be about what they were last year offensively. And when you lose, you know, when you lose Ozuna, who had a better year with the bat last year than he did in 2018, and when you lose Jose Martinez, who truthfully didn't really hit very much last year for him, but when you lose those two types, you got to figure, okay, well, it's going to stay the same or get worse. And I think it's going to be much more on the stay the same side. The best part about that, I guess, or the good part about that is that the defense has to get better, not playing Jose Martinez in the outfield or Ozuna in a corner outfield spot. And while Ozuna was good on the bases, Martinez was not. So the base running will probably get slightly better as well. So if you can keep the offense the same and improve the base running and defense, that's a plus.
Yeah. That's kind of one of my biggest concerns, I guess, for this year in general, is being able to maintain the defense and pitching that we saw last year and base running too, just to that level. Because if they take a step back, it feels like that just puts more pressure on the offense to make up the gap. Because, you know, they went very far with pitching and defense and base running last year, but if they get even 90% of that, well, that's 10 more percent that the offense has to come up with. And, you know, that's a burden, it feels like to me.
Sure.
Cardinals report this week. We're going to start seeing some, you know, some different things. We're going to see some pictures. We're going to see some actual important stuff. I'll ask both of you, and we'll start with Ben. What are you looking forward to seeing the most this spring? What's the kind of thing that you want to keep an eye on, especially early on?
Alan, you want to go first? Or me?
Go ahead, Ben. Yeah. Unless we probably have the same answer. Yeah. But go ahead.
I mean, I'm just looking forward to figuring out how it all shakes out. I think truthfully what I'm most interested in, not just is, because I think there's a couple spots that they've mentioned are open for competition, basically left field and the fifth starter. My interest is more piqued with, okay, what if O'Neill and Thomas, or O'Neill and Justin Williams, or O'Neill and Dylan Carlson, or Dylan Carlson and Justin Williams, or Dylan Carlson and Thomas prove to be obviously your two best outfielders? Do they open up one of the other two spots? Same thing with the pitching. They say it's, you know, it's going to be Hudson, it's going to be Michaelis, it's going to be Flaherty, it's going to be Wainwright, and then one of Kim or Martinez. Well, what if Kim and Martinez are your number two and three starters in the spring? Does somebody else get bumped to the pen? How much of an open competition is it in terms of, is it just for the five spot or for any spot in the rotation type of thing? And I think it's got to be more of a, you're going to play your best players, you know? And we'll see if that happens.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with that as well. I kind of want to see how the shared playing time works in the outfield, because all the names that you listed, and I think we should probably be safe and just go ahead and say Edmund's going to be in that mix somewhere. You know, I have a feeling that he'll probably be an everyday bat in the lineup if he's anywhere close to what he was next year somewhere. And you're right. You know, it's funny. I wonder sometimes if this is all across baseball or if it's the Cardinals that we just peer in on them because they're under the microscope with us so much, to where you do wonder how open these competitions are. I feel like the Cardinals are very bad about saying that it's open, but the decision made pretty quickly.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. As far as Tommy Edmund goes, if it's up to me, I feel like if we can get him 15 to 20 starts at second, 15 to 20 starts at short, 30 to 40 starts at third, I mean, maybe even more if Goldie gets a few days off and Carpenter can play over at first, he may not be needed out in the outfield too much, because I feel like there's enough people in the outfield that we need to see what we have in them, that if Edmund can get enough starts on the infield, that maybe we don't need to run him out there too to take away from the plate appearances from other people.
Sure. I agree with that. That's the way that I would like to see it shake out.
Yeah, it'd be great. And hopefully it will. I feel like we feel more confident with Mike Schilt doing that than some others, but you know, he didn't always do that last year. I mean, Tommy Edman was in the outfield, even though there were 18 different guys that needed to be seen out there. So it's going to be an interesting balancing act for him too, to figure out exactly how to judge all these guys. I think that's going to be the tough thing for them in spring. There's only so many bats to go around. And I know they're talking about back games and, you know, extra, you know, inner scrimmages or whatever the case may be, but to really get a good feel for what these guys are going to be able to do. I think you want to see them in the major league competition and, you know, what that is in spring, you can argue, but I still think it's going to be tough for them to all get enough at bats against decent pitching to have a real good idea of who should be that starter. Cause it's going to be a really small sample size. Mm-hmm. Okay, I guess we ought to ask, I feel like we probably should ask this just in case you want to be extra prepared, but Ben, do you have a Nolan Arredondo projection, you know, ready to go just in case?
I have Castellanos. I do have Shogo Akiyama when it was rumored that we might.
Now, that'd be interesting to hear.
Okay, so for the Reds, I guess now. So Akiyama, since I'm not writing him up anyway. So I have him coming over in 600 plate appearances, hitting .295. About a .375 on base, around a .475 slugging, and around a .850 OPS. So
wow.
That did not happen.
Yeah. Now, that kind of popped, a question popped in my head. How do you factor in Great American Ballpark in that?
Yeah, so I do not have.
Okay, those things are just so far over my head. You know, I wouldn't have been able to, if you could have made something up just now, and I wouldn't have known. It's amazing to me because I think that the power that gets suppressed at Busch is, I think we overlook that quite a bit.
I do too, especially right-handed power.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons why I stumped so hard for Harper last offseason because left-handed power plays so much better at Busch.
Yep. And you would think the front office would, with all the stats and stuff they have, would understand that, but apparently not as much as they understood the bottom line figure, I guess. When you look at this division, Ben, I mean, you know, we've tried a lot. There's been a lot of projections come out in the last, it feels like the last week or so with, you know, win totals and stuff like that. And it feels very, very tight. Is that what you're seeing? How would you rank this to me? If you had to put them in order right now, how would you rank them?
I mean, people can call me a blind homer, but I think it's still the Cardinals to lose. My projections have them somewhere between 90 and 92 wins, depending on how I look at it. And I don't think that the Cubs have gotten better this offseason. I don't know that they've gotten appreciably worse, but I don't think they've gotten better. And a rookie manager, I think that'll be hard to, they'll be hard pressed to win the division with a rookie manager. I feel like the Brewers have probably gotten worse. I don't see that they have gotten better. And then while the Reds have gotten better, they finished 16 games behind us. So I think they've got to prove that they can be a 500 team before they can prove they can take the division. I do feel like we're going to have four teams win 82 plus though, without major injuries. You know, if Yelich misses significant time, or if Goldschmidt misses significant time, or Yachty or something that means a huge, you know, a Rizzo or a Bryant or a, who for the Reds, Castillo, or, you know, just somebody terribly important there too, that it's going to be real rough on those teams. But I think it's going to be a tight race all year long, but I think the Cardinals come out on top, at least with what we've got so far.
It kind of feels that way. You're right. I mean, until somebody comes and takes it from them, I think the Cardinals still have to be. It's not like they stripped the team down, and it's not like you said, the only team that got a lot better is the Reds, who had a long way to go. So, and that may make, like you say, for a lot of teams that are going to be between that 82, 83, and 90 win range. So there's a lot of times that these teams are going to be beaten up on each other. It's just whoever wins. It very well may be whoever wins the NL Central, you know, the head-to-head matchups is the team that wound up winning the whole thing.
And I feel like the Cards have the I feel like they have the ultimate asset in the rotation, and they could even if they run into some issues this year due to so many people reaching high innings limits last year, I think they're well fortified to where they still probably have the best pitching, you know, even with what's behind that initial starting five rotation.
Yeah, the Cardinals' depth is just it's nothing to mess with, you know. It's if you look at all the spots, but I mean outfield, you've got, it may not be star-studded, but you've got five or six guys that are probably capable of giving you 450 good plate appearances. And starting pitching, you've probably got 10 guys that are capable of giving you 150 innings of league average or better ball. And it's very impressive.
Yeah, when you could take a step back a little bit and then see the sustained success that they've done, especially developing pitching, and then you look at what Chicago's tried to do for so long, and they just have those gaps because they haven't been able to do it like the Cardinals do, and it all depends on the arms. It's crazy how much further along they are in their advancement of scouting on pitching than Chicago is. It's crazy. I mean, I understand that Chicago had the lineup they wanted, and they ultimately have the better lineup right now, but they just don't match up in the rotation or pitching throughout the system.
Right. And yeah. I feel like the Cubs, it's just the depth there. If they lose one or two of those, because their starters could bounce back, and kind of like we're talking about with some of the Cardinals hitters, that their pitching could bounce back at an advanced age for baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But if one or two of them go down, which that always happens every year, that you're looking at a Tyler Chatwood taking over, or I don't know, some, you know, prospect A who I've never heard of because it's the Cubs organization.
Exactly.
Taking over, and they haven't shown they can do that. So.
Well, before we let you go, I think there is one other thing we should go over. The only other thing that's kind of come out this week is that the Cardinals announced their ballot for the Cardinal Hall of Fame this time around. And it's, of course, a full ballot. And so I'll read over them, and then we can kind of decide who would you be putting in. The nominees are Steve Carlton, Keith Hernandez, Tommy Herr, Matt Morris, Edgar Renteria, Lee Smith, John Tudor. Kind of a fairly good mix of eras there. There doesn't seem to be anything that's, you know, any one era that's more emphasized than another. We may be finally getting a little bit out of the 80s to some degree. Ben, if you're picking, who are you going to send in?
Looked over the stats the other day for that, and it's only for what they do with the Cardinals that matters, right? Because otherwise it's Carlton in a heartbeat.
I think you're focusing on what they did in St. Louis.
Okay, then I'm going complete homer. Well, not homer, I guess. They're all homers. Completely with Matt, with what I want, because I loved Matt Morris growing up.
Yeah.
You know, he was kind of like that during my high school and college years. He was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the guy for a while. And it was kind of a shame that he ended up throwing 2005 was the last year with us. And then he leaves and we win it all in 06 finally. Yeah. I was kind of bummed for him. And then on the offensive side, I didn't know that this is kind of the opposite. I did not know his era at all. I really wanted to pull for a Renteria or Tom Herr, but I think just looking at the stats, I got to go Keith Hernandez.
Oh, one. Yeah.
So I went with one of each, a hitter and a pitcher.
Alan?
Yeah, it's funny. I wondered if that's the direction you were going to go, because to be honest with you, if you look at it, the slam dunk should be Hernandez, and I do think they lined it up that way. I would be surprised if Hernandez didn't get in, and that would be my pick, and it would have been my pick last year. I was 6-7 in that run, but he was a stud. And it's funny, my dad talks about how great of a first baseman he was. And then when you look at his offensive numbers, they were all super strong as well. I mean, and he's an MVP, world champion. That says a lot. I think that there has been enough groundswell on that where he gets in pretty easy. It's funny that you bring that up about Morris, because I feel the same way. Because it was that high school, college days, he was the guy you wanted to take the ball back then. And to be honest, when I looked at the numbers, I was surprised they were as good as they were. You know, because a lot of times I think that I personally overthink it because I'm just a huge Cardinals fan. But I feel like if he were to get in, it would be pretty deserving. But it may be just one of those seasons. I don't know. He may be the one that deserves to get in. I'm a huge 80s Cardinals fan. That's what I grew up on. I was glad to see her get on the ballot. Really was. He looks exactly like my uncle. And we always joked about that growing up. You know, that was a skill set, you know, that not a lot of power, but boy, he drove in runs. But of course he had the Jackrabbits in front of him to drive in. So that era was fun to watch. If you look at it outside of kind of just going at your favorites and whatnot, I remember thinking Renteria was going to be the next guy. I was like, man, when he left, and it was kind of heartbreaking after 2004 when he left, I thought that he would be a long-term guy and he would be a stud. I know that's not answering the question, just kind of breaking down these guys. But if I kind of feel like Hernandez is the shoe-in on this one. I don't know why. I feel like Carlton may be as well, but I'm not certain they're going to get two guys in the same year that you associate with another organization so heavy. Which kind of, to me, kind of falls like it may be a Hernandez-type Morris situation.
Well, and of course, in theory, I'm putting this in quotes because they never released the vote totals. But in theory, it's all about what the fans vote on.
Sure.
They've put it together. You know, I have always downgraded Hernandez when he's been on these. And it is interesting. I mean, Hernandez is on every year, and that's not always the case. Carlton has been on and off and on and off. But Hernandez is. And I think you're kind of right, Alan, that they're kind of trying to push him toward that. And it's fair enough, but he's always fallen down my list because I do associate him with the Mets.
Sure.
I came into baseball, watching baseball in, you know, the late 80s. And so he was well established as a Met by that point in time. He's very attached to the Mets as a broadcaster. But I think you're kind of right. I think right now it's looking like that's a probability. If I was just voting, you know, I love Matt Morris too. I don't know that I would vote for him in right now, but I think he should be there at some point in time. I don't know. I don't really know how I would vote, but I think I would probably – I'm really big on Renteria. I really – and that's recency bias. That's that 2004 team, because you're going to have Edmonds in. You're going to have Roland in. You've already got those guys in. You're going to have Pujols in. You know, to have Renteria in, you know, Yadi will be in there at some point in time, although Yadi was barely on that team. But I think that I would probably just out of total bias go with Renteria and probably Matt Morris. It's very interesting though. I think it's, you know, we've talked all around the candidates and not even mentioned Lee Smith, who is an actual Hall of Famer.
Yeah. No, I agree. And that it's funny. You bring me back around to Smith, but I actually wanted to put my two cents in on Tudor. Smith, I'm really guilty of associating him with the Cubs. And I think it's because of the Cubs that I don't think as much of Smith, which isn't really fair. Now I will tell you with Tudor though, when we talk about Morris being the big game guy in the 90s, Tudor was completely that from 85 to 87. I mean, that was the guy they wanted. Even when you hear Andujar's name, I always felt like the best chance they had to win was Tudor. I mean, the soft throwing lefty that just got people out. You know, the year that he won almost 20 straight games, and he was like 0-5 or 0-6 at the time, and a high school coach told him what he was doing wrong, and after that he just took off. Those stories are amazing to me. It was he was incredible, you know, back in those 80s days. And that's after we got off and we were talking, I was like, guys that listen to this that are friends of mine are going to hate me for not bringing this up.
Okay, so I've got three things to bring up, I guess. So with Tudor, I wanted to, growing up in that same area, I mean, like 85, 14 complete games.
Crazy, yeah.
A whip under one, second in the Cy Young, but I looked at his stats a little more objectively, and he only had 2 years with the Cardinals in which he threw more than 22 starts. And I couldn't bring myself to do it. I can't remember how his career ended. I know he ended here with an amazing year as age 36, and then did he just walk away?
I want to say he ended with the Red Sox.
He started. He started with.
The he started Red Sox. With them. That's where I'm at. Yeah, looks like it. It looks like he just.
But I mean, man, he had a 2.4 ERA over 22 starts, a WHIP of 1.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I don't know if I'm
going to
walk away after that.
That 90 team took a toll on a lot of people.
That's true. Yeah, I think that was a lot of it. He actually had good numbers with the Dodgers as well. You know what I mean? He had a good end of the career.
He did have some injuries. Let's see. He injured his elbow in the 88 postseason, missed a lot of 89, and I think probably even though he came back and had a good 90, he just didn't want to push it. Let me be my guess.
Yeah, that could be. Okay, second thing I wanted to bring up was Edgar Renteria's 2003 season and Tom Herr's 1985 season. I don't think until looking at them the other day I realized how closely those seasons align to each other.
Interesting.
Tom Herr hit 302, 379. 8 homers, 38 doubles, 110 RBI.
Runs.
Renteria hit 330, 394, 13 homers, 47 doubles, 100 RBI, 96 runs. They stole 31 for her and 34 for Renteria. Caught 3 times and 7 times. Like, man, those seasons. And both of them walked more than they struck out.
Wow.
I didn't quite realize. I guess I didn't remember her well enough to realize that I was basically watching Tom Herr play shortstop that year, apparently.
It's crazy. That infield was so good, though.
And then do we have time for me to tell a short Lee Smith
story? Absolutely. We don't have a time limit. We go as long as we want to, so go ahead.
Okay. So I just remember being at a game one time. I'm sitting up the first baseline with my dad. And a brawl breaks out. And it was back when Smith was playing for us. And I, for the life of me, I can't remember. It was either a Reds game or a Marlins game, I feel like. And I guess it wasn't a brawl like the Cincinnati brawl of a few years ago. It was more like, you know, the bench is empty. There's a whole bunch of people pushing and shoving. And Smith, you could just see him because the Cardinals were in the right field bullpen at the time. And I was sitting on the third base side, not the first base side. So I could just like look straight out and you just see Smith walking towards the infield. Everybody else is jogging in and he is just at like this leisurely stroll. And he walks all the way in and I'm not going to remember which Cardinal pitcher was going that day, but the pitcher was the one that was jawing the most. And he grabs him by the back of the collar, spins him around, grabs him by both arms, walks him to the bench and then walks back to the bullpen. And the it was hilarious.
Yeah, I think he probably most likely interrupted Lee's nap, most likely, because I think that was his his routine to take a nap until like the sixth or seventh inning and then start getting ready. So that may have disturbed you. That's a great story.
That is great. When you think about it, is I can't think of a guy outside of Dave Stewart that was as intimidating as Smith.
Mm-hmm. Oh man,
You know, and it's kind of Smith and Morris to a degree. Maybe some of those they have the disadvantage when you're looking at a Cardinal Hall of Fame is that they didn't play on necessarily good teams, didn't play in postseason very much or very, you know, very deep into those. They weren't on a legendary team. And there's so many teams that win in St. Louis that if you're in that stretch where, you know, like I said, Matt Morris got what they had 2000 and the late 2000s, he got some time in the postseason, but they weren't necessarily deep runs. Lee Smith missed them all. That was during that rebuilding time period. You just don't have the same cachet in St. Louis as some other people that, you know, that did make those teams. Yeah. At least that's my opinion.
It makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, that's right on.
All right. Well, we've gone about an hour. So, Ben, I really appreciate you joining us and going through the projections. Look forward to checking those out. Is there anything else you want to mention? Hey, anytime. Is there anything else you want to talk about or anything else you want to promote before we wrap it up?
Yeah, I'll just say one more thing about the pitching projections. This year, I'm adding something at the bottom. I've never done this before. I'm a little worried to see how it goes or anxious to see how it goes with people. But I've always steered clear of wins and losses being projected just because those are so determinant on how many runs get scored those days and all that that I've not wanted to do it. But I'm taking a crack at that this year based on just kind of how much I'm projecting for the offense, what I'm projecting for the bullpen. And so, like, somebody like a Flaherty who's going to go deeper into a game than somebody like a Hudson kind of gets more of the bullpen's runs allowed added on to what I think they're going to give up. And comparing that to what I think the Cardinals will score on those games and assigning a kind of using like a Pythagorean win-loss by Pythagpad or whatever it's called to see what I think the wins and losses will be, not for the pitcher, but for the Cardinals in their starts.
Right.
Okay. So, interesting.
Yeah. So I'm trying that out exercise this year.
Cool.
And then since I'm with Birds on the Black, I do want to stump for Kyle Reese too, because he's working hard on his projection or his Dirty 35 prospect series, and he is absolutely awesome at what he does.
Yeah, absolutely.
I look forward to those more every year than just about anything Cardinal related.
And we're fortunate enough, we're scheduled to have both Kyle and Trevor Huth, who's writing prospects over at Viva Alberto's, middle of next week on here. Maybe our next episode, we may get one in between then and now, but I'm looking forward to those guys telling us about the things that are coming up. And yeah, I'm sure we'll be talking about the Dirty 35, which really kind of expands to the Dirty, 50, 51, if you will, when you're talking about the people that didn't make the cut and all that. Kyle's amazing at what he does on those. And I'm very interested to see what Trevor is going to do with the prospects as well. So, but definitely, and everybody at Birds on the Black, obviously we love those guys. So, and gal, and then obviously people should be reading that all the time. So, but all right, until next time, whenever that may be, that's Ben and Alan and I'm Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!